Ladies and gentlemen, it's a personal thrill to call upon our next speaker, the chairman of the American Trucking Associations, the owner, the founder, the CEO, the president of Boyle Transportation Company, a man who energizes everybody on the subject of transportation. And I am thrilled because the EU Parliament had the privilege of listening to my good friend, Andrew Boyle. Andrew Boyle.
Thank you, my friend. Jeez, if only my mother were here to hear that. Disproved all her predictions, Devendra, thank you. So why are we here talking about trucking? Well, a handful of years ago, I was asked to kind of get in line of succession to ultimately become chair of the American Trucking Associations. And I don't have a lot of free time, like a lot of you folks, quite demanding job and home life and all that sort of stuff. So this is effectively a second full-time job for no pay, by the way. But succinctly, this is what we do, right? I can guarantee you, everybody here is affected by our industry, both professionally and personally. So, there are some other modes that transport, biologics and so forth, but you guys aren't railroad people. There's a little bit of ocean activity, right? Particularly like small molecule generics, that's a lot of ocean freight, and some air cargo, certainly. But you guys are trucking people, and I'm here and can deputize you, knight you as honorary truckers. For your consumption, 71 or 73% of tonnage moved domestically is by truck. I'm not a big tonnage guy. I'm more of a dollar guy. You can't pay the rent with tonnage. So we do 80% of the spend for domestic freight transportation. But more importantly for me personally, when I was asked to assume that role, is we employ 8 million Americans. And those of us who pay college tuitions can appreciate the next fact, that the vast majority of those 8 million people in our industry do not require or do not have hundreds of thousands of dollars in college debt, right? So what I'm inspired by and what I find the most gratifying about our work is that we create good American blue-collar jobs. Our professional truck drivers, if you work locally, in your home every night, you work 40, you're making $80,000. If you go over the road, you're making $100,000, $120,000, right? And if you live in Tennessee, Alabama, the lower cost area, the Bay Area, okay, that's the different calculus there. But that is what pretty inspiring. So that's what gets me fired up, and that's why I agreed to do it. Briefly about what my company does. Actual trucking business. We own a fleet of equipment. We employ professional drivers 24/7, and we serve two industries: government defense, so high security military work in different government agencies. All of our folks have security clearances, and then the other about 70% is in life sciences, so transporting temperature sensitive commodities for the life science industry, and that's why my hairline's like this. But what gets me fired up again is, creating good environment for blue-collar folks. We were named the single best work environment 2 years in a row for all professional truck drivers in all of the U.S. and Canada by an objective independent third party. And then if you're like me and you have a vendor come to your office and they say, we're going to give you a lot more data. We're going to give you so much more data. I say, get the hell out of my office. I do not need more data. Right? And in our business, serving you guys, we have so much data coming from so many sources that we don't want to bludgeon people, right? But rather distill it down into actionable information that is relevant to the client. So we have our own software application that we have a full-time software development team of 6 people, and augmented by external providers, that creates a unique software platform to communicate all that relevant stuff to our clients. Who's transporting the product? What are the particulars? What is the temperature history? Where's the location? What's the ETA? This is all stuff that's pushed out automatically to our clients. And then documents, right, that we have images of, so that the trade folks at the drug companies can confirm with the wholesalers when it lands at their dock that, yes, I can bill you now. And then importantly, this is called foreshadowing. We're big believers in reducing environmental impact. Our headquarters is solar powered. We are the only transporter in North America registered and certified to ISO 14001. Very rigorous environmental management program. And then the EPA SmartWay program, if you're not participating in, you should yesterday. And then we named, again, for the second year in a row, a top green fleet by an industry publication. That's the table I'm setting because I'm gonna have some other commentary about sustainability going forward. And then we were acquired 2.5 years ago by Andlauer Healthcare Group in Canada. One of our sister companies, my partner, Bruce Bailey, is here from Skelton Truck Lines. We both operate in the States. And then in Canada, through its many different subsidiaries, ATS, Skelton, Accuristics in Canada, Andlauer effectively dominates healthcare logistics in Canada. So that's kind of who we are, where we're coming from. Now let's move forward into the, and then in the industry as a whole, I get a lot of questions. Okay. What about technology, AI, et cetera, AV, EV, et cetera, in the trucking world? There's a ton of applied technology that already goes on. It's not in the abstract, it's applied. So yes, AI, for example, a lot of us use optimization tools that look at this multivariable math problems. You have this fleet, you have all these demands, you have all these people, maintenance, et cetera. How do you optimize that? A lot of us use those types of tools that involve AI. And then similarly with safety. So most advanced fleets have some sort of camera systems on their vehicles now. AI uses, cameras use that type of software to determine, are you driving safely? Are you stopping, coming to a complete stop at stop signs? Many of you would fail. And then what is capturing the speed limit sign? Are you driving the speed limit? These types of things. And then we factor in into gamification within the fleet. You know, are you part of incentive compensation? Who's driving this most safely within the fleet? Documentation. So a lot of stuff that in the last 10 years, less than truckload carriers, for example, that pick up multiple shipments on a truck, they have all this paperwork. The last 10 years or so, 20 years really, there's been a growth in offshoring to do the data entry, say in the Philippines and in India, et cetera, in Colombia. That is kind of shifting now to more scraping. There are software tools that can just grab that stuff and then populate in the systems for clients. So a ton of applied technology in our industry. It's not this kind of abstract vapor, but really applied for the benefit of clients. And you know, safety is the most important factor in my estimation. Our industry spends $14 billion a year on safety, you know, technology, training, et cetera. All right, quickly on the economic update. So goods and experiences. The US economy consists of 70% consumer spending. As everybody would assume, had we gone back a couple years here in the data, there was a complete swing in terms of the proportion of consumer spending that was allocated to goods versus experiences, right? 2020, 2021, first half of 22, people were spending on goods, not doing as much in terms of experiences. That inverted in the last year and a half to 2 years. So experiences are not shipped on trucks. So there's kind of this pendulum, massive pendulum swing. Now we're kind of back to a little bit more normalcy. Similarly with inventory to sales, that, you know, how many widgets do you carry relative to the number you sell? We were in a really tight inventory environment. So when there's huge demand and really tight inventories, you're super reliant on just-in-time transportation logistics networks. And that is when you have high demand and tight inventories, that's when truckers go out and buy themselves a new boat. Okay. And then when demand drops and you have fat inventories, well, that boat gets repossessed. Yeah. So both on the demand side and the inventory side, we've kind of returned a little bit more to normalcy. Quickly, and many of you are more expert in this context than I am, but I showed at another conference a couple years ago the interest or RFPs that went out to nearshoring, friendshoring, this whole notion, right, relative to sourcing from China. Well, the output has been we have to consider trade wars, right? All the tariffs and trade wars that have happened. And by the way, if there's a second Trump administration, that's going to start day one. Last time they emphasized tax cuts, you know, tax reform in the trade stuff didn't really happen for another year. That would happen day one. So that's when we talk about resilient supply chains, this is something to consider. But this looks at the market share, so to speak, of importers to the US in the change in market share from 2017 to today. So China has lost in value of market share almost 8%. We see, as you guys know, a lot more going to Southeast Asia and Mexico. Can anyone tell me what the number one country in terms of importing to the US by value is currently? Vietnam, it's good. What is it? Well, the one we would typically think would be what? China. But what we've seen just in, this is by value, I should say, not right, not by like TEUs or other volume. It is Mexico, yes. So we can see here the green line, Mexico has eclipsed China as our number one importer by value. Now, granted, you think auto, right, there are a lot of commodities that are of higher value relative to maybe the quantities that come in from China. Similarly, a lot of commodities come in from, commodities meaning energy related, from Canada, right? So that's our second trading partner right now, or neck and neck with China. So what does that mean to us? Well, trade means trucking. Nearshoring means more trucking. So the folks who are involved in the NAFTA trade, so to speak, the old NAFTA, USMCA, and particularly across the border from Mexico, we have had an increase in volumes and activities that is complicated somewhat by border enforcement issues now. We have very long waits getting across the border in Laredo. Okay, now some of this stuff is a little bit political, inherently. I personally am nonpartisan. Now, in Massachusetts, I vote Republican, but those are like normal people, right? They're not like, you know, so at the national level, it's different. But as it pertains to how do we solve problems, I'm not into this fracturing thing. How can we, and that's what our industry trade association, how can we achieve things? Let's serve, you know, make things more efficient and safer, et cetera. So independent contractors. The state of California, a couple years ago, effectively outlawed the independent contractor business model. Those of you who are kind of residents, God bless you, have kind of had to tackle this. Now, at the federal level, the Biden administration recently, it's kind of by executive order, but you notice a proposed rulemaking. It's a rulemaking effective, I think it's this month, to really put the screws to that misclassification, so to speak, by, you know, some people's perception of it being misclassified. This is not specific to trucking. This is writ large. Now, our disposition is, provided everything is above board, because I do think there is quite a lot of misclassification of workers, and in some cases, it can be predatory or exploitative. So, but provided everything's above board, people should have the right to choose whether to be an independent contractor or an employee. But this is a political issue. Who do you think, what entities are really driving toward classifying everybody as an employee? Any guesses? Tends to be Democrats, but what non-political or other entities are there? Unions. So labor unions. Right? If you're the Teamsters, for example, or whatever union, you want everybody classified as an employee so you can get them on your rolls. Right? So this is this administration claims to be the most union-friendly administration in history. So this is a very political issue. So that's something we're fighting. Julie Hsu, who's been nominated for the second time as the US Labor Secretary, served in that capacity here in the state of California when AB 5 was enacted. So. Just, you know, for your antenna to be up. Because what does that mean to you? It's a cost factor, right? So if you can 1099 everybody versus taking them on as employees with benefits, vacation, sick days, all that and payroll taxes, the costs are higher. My company, we don't use any independent contractors. So competitively, you know, we're not averse to it, but generally speaking, we should think people should have the right to choose, provided everything's above board. Now, some people will argue, hey, is there a shortage of truck drivers? Is there not? First of all, it's global. It's not unique to us. And yes, there's some cyclicality. There's some ebb and flow given demand, but it's more of a structural issue. If I were to ask people here who wants to raise their children to become truck drivers, you don't have a lot of hands raised, right? It's typically what's your alternative. Now, regardless, on a structural basis, if more than half of your people in a skilled labor demographic are older than 50, it's usually not a good sign, right? So we're doing a lot to try to attract more people. In my company, we only have about 8 to 12% of the driving population are women. In our company, we have 40% women professional drivers. Now, many states, as we know, legalize, or if you prefer, decriminalize marijuana. So who here partakes in the consumption of... Okay, well, I guess nobody here is a CDL holder, Bruce, I guess. Not too many truck drivers. But, okay, so I don't have any opinion on that. Who gives a shit, right, what I think? But it is in conflict with the Department of Transportation regulations for drug and alcohol testing for truck drivers. So we had 140,000 people in the last couple of years test positive for marijuana. It doesn't necessarily imply that you're inebriated or whatever, you're high right now. It means it's in your system. So we got 140,000 who are out of the box. They're in the penalty box unless you go through this process of getting back in. Very few do. So certain e-commerce, so like the FedExes of the world, even when they do the ground in the home delivery, all their drivers, they do require them to do drug testing. I have some friends that run, there's a large e-commerce player based in Seattle. They tell their franchisees, so to speak, in distribution, do not test for marijuana. Or don't advertise that you do, because you're going to eliminate a huge part of the pool. So just kind of interesting, right? We think that all drivers of commercial vehicles should probably be, you know, subjected to drug and alcohol testing. Okay, does anybody here in the biopharma world think that there should be tort reform? That's usually red meat to the drug companies and distributors. So we have a huge issue with torts. So another way to say torts is crazy lawsuits. So the most egregious one, about 8 years ago, a truck from a public trucking company going westbound in Texas on I-20. By all accounts, the police and all parties involved, the truck is under control, under the speed limit, stopped in a safe distance. A family going eastbound on the interstate, loses control of a pickup truck, spins out of control, crosses the median, smashes into the tractor trailer. Tragically, two people in the family die. A jury found in favor of the family for $100 million. Wow. So this sentiment of kind of anti-business finds its way to juries, right? So if you get to a jury, you're in rough shape. Now, similar, on a related note, litigation finance is now an asset class for investors. Oh, you're a trial attorney going after this? I'm going to float you the money. I'm going to be your investor to fund this 6 months or 2 years of litigation, and then we share the proceeds. A year ago, I'm reading the Wall Street Journal, and this article is lauding this young woman who dropped out of Harvard, moved to San Francisco, started up a fund called Legalist, and she's delivering 25% returns to her investor. It's litigation finance. That's an asset class. So anyways, what you should be aware of is the insurance markets and trucking have really seized. Who the hell wants to play in that market, right? So the rates have risen dramatically, and as a result, many, particularly private carriers, will say, wait a second, I'm going to double my rates to pay for the same premium? How about I just keep the same premium or reduce it and take way less in limits? So that means more risk for the shippers or owners of product, because if there's a catastrophic incident, those trial attorneys come after the deep pockets. So you just want to make sure you engage with your service providers to know where their limits are. And by the way, trying to achieve risk management through contracts that apply onerous terms to a service provider, that's not the way to manage your risk. Because when the shit goes down, they come after the deep pockets, right? And if that company is not worth the book value, you know, a few million bucks, you know, they toss the keys to you. So just something for awareness. We've achieved tort reform in several states. In Florida last year, just to give you an idea of the problem, has anyone heard of this Morgan & Morgan? Right, so billboard lawyers all over the place, like sports radio, they filed, that one firm in Florida the week before tort reform was enacted, they filed 25,000 lawsuits. So just to give you a sense. Okay, so I told you from the beginning, right, we're big believers in environmental management. We are at the top, my company, top 1% of the top 1%. Is anybody here opposed to reducing environmental impact in transportation? Okay. When I'm in a trucking group and I say, is anybody here opposed to reducing environmental impact of transportation? It's the same response. Do you know why? Because if you raise your hand, you would be what's called a friggin' sociopath. So let's establish that as the virtue. The virtue is we all want to minimize environmental impact of transportation. We all sign up to that. So a year ago, last April, I'm driving home on a Wednesday night, and the head lobbyist at ATA calls me and says, hey, can you come and testify at the Senate hearing next week? I said, well, that's a bit of an issue because I had a problem that every American could relate to. I was going on a golf trip to Ireland that Tuesday. So I rearranged and went down. And most of the stuff that we do with these hearings, it's house transportation infrastructure. It's like Senate Commerce. It's really, they're non-controversial issues. But this was, they just, a week earlier, the US EPA had said, we're going to allow every state to determine its own emission regulations. And then secondly, the 2027 standard we had set up with industry, with OEMs, et cetera, for emissions for trucking, we're going to reopen that with just a few years to go. The OEMs have invested hundreds of millions of dollars. Okay, well, that's weird. So then I get in this situation where it is, unfortunately, we have this, the virtue that we all agree with, and then you have this, a lot of people wed to one particular technology. And they think they extrapolate from their personal experience with the passenger vehicle and want to project it across all commercial vehicles. So it's fascinating. California is enacted this so-called Advanced Clean Truck Rule, where it's effectively mandating the adoption of electric vehicles for heavy-duty trucks. You guys talk about cars amongst yourself. I'm not talking about cars. We're talking about tractor-trailer trucks. This is the take rate that's being mandated. Okay. So when you have a trade association, one of the benefits is all the participants that have real-world experience, including the manufacturers, the utility companies, the fleets who are trying to do something, they tell you, here's all my information. So then you go forward and you explain that perspective. And unfortunately, then you're met with, what you face is not a willingness to be logical, but rather dogma. Dogma. Does anybody, okay, so what's the leading EV company in the world, or based in the US? What people would say Tesla, okay. Great products. So they had, do you remember there's this big announcement, smoke machines and all this, and Musk comes out and they show there's Tesla Semi? Do you remember that? Who's most psyched about it? Us. We're so, wow, 70% fewer parts, less maintenance, sounds awesome. We're psyched. That press announcement was 7 years ago. How many trucks have they delivered? 18. 18, still 7 years later, the leading EV maker. Okay, so and all they're doing is hauling Frito-Lay products. It sounds too funny to be true. Okay. So let's keep this in perspective, right? That's what we're dealing with. And the range is not, they're not publicizing it. So the real fleets, the one that is on our exec committee, for example, that has the largest fleet of EVs in Southern California, they say, it's just for gloss. They do like 120 miles on a charge. Charge takes 6-8 hours. right? So we just have to, what I'd like to do is reset people's kind of understanding relative to the 1980s, say 1988 to today. Emissions on diesel trucks have been lowered 99%. So what we're dealing with is this last 1%. The federal standard for 2027 was reducing it by 75%. Everybody's further, 75% of that last 1%. Everybody's on board. Industry, manufacturers, everybody's on board. But last year, California said, no, no, that's not good enough. We want to reduce it by 98%. And the OEMs went through the exercise. It's not doable. It's not achievable. At the federal level, when you implement a regulation, you have to do this kind of analysis, cost-benefit analysis. You don't have to do that at the state level. So, and this is kind of the issue, is to get more range, you have to put on more batteries. Each battery in a heavy-duty truck weighs 8,000 pounds. So say you get a four-pack to go like 400 miles. Now we go like 1,200 miles in one fueling of diesel fuel, right? So the problem is, as you increase range with weight, you reduce the payload capacity. So the Wall Street Journal, for example, back in over Christmas, did a ride-along with a drayage truck, a battery drayage truck in Port of LA and Long Beach. Awesome, the driver loved it and stuff. Typically, that truck does 6 turns a day of containers. They were able to do 2. So we're not averse to it, right? We're not averse to alternative fuels, alternative technologies. That's exciting. The problem is when it's mandated, when there's no charging infrastructure, the vehicle has extraordinary limitations. So that's all a bit of an issue. Then let's face it, where does electricity come from? So I'm there and Senator Padilla from California says, oh, I'm so proud of California for driving us from fossil fuel vehicles to electric vehicles. And I wanted to raise my, he wouldn't engage me. Where the hell do we think electricity comes from? So my company, and I, you know, some of your manufacturing sites are solar, we have solar powered. I'm an investor in a solar powered business in Southern California where we used EV batteries to store and sell back. I'm into it. But renewables is still only about 20%, right? We get 60% fossil fuels. So if you think that, and how are we sourcing them? Right, so they're coming from off the rare earths, right, and other elements that go into the making of the vehicles are horrible for the environment. Horrible. So let's not conflate EVs, zero emissions, with environmentally friendly. Zero emissions is awesome, and that's what we all want to get to. But if we're raping and pillaging the earth to get to zero emissions, that's like NIMBYism, not in my backyard, on a global scale. So let's just think of it in the total life cycle. So our research institute, again, we're agnostic. We want alternative fuels. We want alternative powertrains. Awesome. But when you look at the total life cycle, if we look at a diesel truck, here is 100%. Building a BEV truck is 7 times worse for the environment. But the total life cycle is a 30% benefit. The problem is we're going to need at least 30% to 50% more vehicles to accomplish the same business. So what I came around to with this in the Senate here and kind of doing research, so I showed you earlier 99% reduction over it since 1988. Since 2010 to today, pre-2010 to today, it's an 80% drop in emissions. So what we're trying to say is half the trucks on the road in the U.S. are pre-2010. So if you get those off vehicle to vehicle, you have an 80% benefit. So in aggregate, half of 80%, if we got old trucks off the road, we could have a 40% reduction in emissions. Who is opposed to that? So we're trying to do it through things like get rid of this 100-year-old excise tax. We pay 50 grand in a tractor trailer and a new tractor trailer in excise taxes. So let's get rid of that because these smaller fleets have difficulty doing it. All right, what can we do? Because we're doers. We're not pontificators, we're not prognosticators, we're doers. What should you be doing right now? Well, a lot of carriers and forwarders, et cetera, like what we do for our clients every quarter is we furnish them relative to your lanes and the activity we've done for you using our EPA SmartWay data, we furnish you reports on the environmental impact of your shipments with us. And because we can compare it to US government data, we know that our performance is 64% better than the average trucking fleet. So mode shift is important, but if you assume that all participants in the mode are the same, you're wrong, right? So this is one thing, this is a carrot. And 8,800 trees are saved. Is anyone here opposed to trees? Or puppies? If you don't like trees or puppies, we got a problem. Okay, and then we can manage it, right? ISO certification forces you to manage stuff with environmental performance. But in summary, what can you do now? If you are not weighing, assigning a value or a weight to environmental performance when you choose service providers, I don't want to be confrontational, but if your company has these lofty, glossy statements for 2040 and 2050, are you going to be in your job in 2050? A lot of us won't be working in 2050, right? So that's kind of, but you're not doing something now. I don't think you're being very sincere. You have to weight specify. A gentleman said earlier on a panel, it has to be in your budget. What do you value when you're buying transportation? Enroll in the EPA Smart Weight program. It measures things. You can choose providers by how they rank in that program. Other certifications. The simplest thing is new trucks are cleaner and safer. So you can just have some sort of standard where I don't ship on trucks that are older than, I mean, our fleet's 1 to 3 years old. You could just say, you don't have to say, like say 5 years old. Because somebody at the loading dock can just open the truck door and you see in the plate the model year. So it's that simple. Don't ship on trucks older than, say, 5 years old, because new trucks are cleaner and safer. We're going to make a much more efficient and immediate impact on emissions in aggregate if we do stuff like this, because the trillion-plus dollars it's going to take in 20, 30 years to electrify the whole of transportation in America, we're just kind of talking about it in the abstract. In many cases, we're going to be net worse off for the environment. So that's about it. I apologize. But I'd welcome any, and I don't have a problem if people disagree with me. I think we have to get back to the point of disagreement to be more constructive. So I'd welcome questions or comments.
You're going to hang in here, and during lunch, we can all attack you.
Yes, yes, yes. We're used to that. We have a lot of that, right? Before 9 a.m. every day.
And to be honest, you rattle every bone in my body and every gray cell in my head. But what an incredible understanding you've given us of where we are. Thank you so, so very much.
Thank you, brother. Thanks, brother.